I mean, you're the soccer man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all soccer people.
This is Roots Pod.
This rivalry was born out of geography and then grew because of competition. That wasn't solely competition-based. Below going for goal! Flo Below with the moment for the Roots, leveling!
Welcome into Roots Pod. That's right, your favorite podcast, usually featuring three people discussing the Oakland Roots, is back. Our World Cup hydration break is over, and I know you probably have one question. Why? Why would you want to talk about this now? And I'm going to tell you why. It's because we would never leave you hanging. We would never skip our annual end-of-season collapse stadium drama episode. And that's what we have. That's what we have this week. It's been a month, roughly, more or less, since our last episode, in which time we saw some incredible World Cup performances, which allowed us to briefly forget about the Oakland Roots. And they were also watching the World Cup, I guess, because we've got three league matches to talk about, three losses, and it's a little bit like, you know, that those early to mid-season performances where the results look good, or rather the performances look good, but the results didn't match, have kind of started to catch up with the Roots, who are now somehow, after one of the better starts to the season, on the wrong side of the playoff line. But of course, the topic du jour, the topic that is dominating Oakland Roots discourse these days, the Coliseum, where the Roots are going to play next year, everything that goes into that, lot of, let's call it interesting, reporting from the last couple of days at this point. None of it really, it all looks bad. None of it really feels straightforward. None of the stories do. None of the quotes we're getting from the people involved. But it just doesn't look great. And it comes at a time when the team is struggling on the pitch. So I feel like before we get into this, I just want to remind everyone of Roots Blog's number one rule for watching the Oakland Roots, thinking about the Oakland Roots, is that things are almost never as bad as they look. And my personal opinion is that that probably is very much applicable right now, but, you know, we'll get into it. I am, of course, Aaron, and I'm joined in the virtual studio with John and Peter, and we're going to talk about the stadium, and then we'll get to the soccer, because I think the stadium is just in the forefront of everyone's mind right now. And so, actually, John, let me start with you, because you actually, right before we went to record, you put up an article riffing off some Chronicle reporting. And so let's just start with a rundown of what we have seen in the news about the Coliseum and the Oakland Roots for the end of this season and the beginning of next season before we spout off with half-baked and barely educated takes about it.
Yeah, let's go into it. So last week, JPA Executive Commissioner, Executive Director Henry Gardner leaks to Steve Tavares, East Bay Insider, that Oakland Roots have defaulted on its $1.4 million lease agreement for the Oakland Coliseum. And then 2 days later, during Oakland Roots match against Sacramento Republic, Gardner, you know, another article comes out, this time from the East Bay Times, where Gardner is leaking more information that the JPA Coliseum Authority, Legends Global, whatever fucking name it is, has not agreed to the payment plan that Oakland Roots submitted to them on that Friday after the original information leaked. And he told the East Bay Times that if Roots do not supply them with an agreement that a plan that they agree on, that they have the option of canceling the next game, future games. He also leaked in that article to the East Bay Times and then leaked again to Steve Tavares that they are, or he is, I don't even want to say they are, he is demanding an additional $200,000 per game that there is no agreement in place. If there's no agreement in place through these six games, that's essentially another $1.2 million. That is essentially doubling the lease agreement. Today, San Francisco Chronicle cites JPA Commissioner David Halbert, that he said he scaled things back. He said there is no uniform opinion from the JPA, Coliseum Authority, blah, blah, blah. And that any agreement, any plan, any, you know, decision towards canceling games must be agreed upon from the entire JPA board. So what does that tell you? It tells you that there are a lot of differing opinions within the JPA, that Gardner is essentially acting on his own with maybe one or two other players in agreement with him, but essentially Gardner has put his name on this. He's acting on his own. So there is no uniform opinion amongst the JPA. There is no final decision about canceling Roots games or tacking on another $200,000 per game. So like Aaron said, nothing is as bad as we think it is with Oakland Roots.
Right. So the basic rundown, the Roots, we don't know, I guess, do we know, for, is the 1.4, is that their yearly rent or is that just what they owe at this point? The things they haven't paid, the balance of their account.
Yeah, I assume it's the rent. It's essentially, what was it, like $200,000 per game or something like that. So yeah, it was the annual rent for the place, which is less than I thought it was originally. I remember at the unveiling, you know, press conference, was it was supposed to be $3 million per year. So,
well, that's what makes me wonder if they've made some payments and just aren't making further payments or are trying to renegotiate the terms of payment or whatever, because I agree that that seems like a pretty low number for a yearly rent, given the number of events that they put on there. Some indication that they proposed an alternative plan and that somebody came back and said, no, why don't you actually pay us double what you owe us? An extra $200,000 for the final seven games. And that's obviously not going anywhere.
It's so strange because it just seemed like the paying double made me wonder if I was misunderstanding the reporting, that like they're saying basically we'll amortize the $1.4 million over the remaining seven games. But it appears to be additional, I guess.
Yeah, no, I had the same reaction as you, that it looks like it looked something like a compromise, but when you look at it for an extra half second, you realize it's more of a fuck you than a compromise. It's just an odd way to negotiate. That's for sure.
Well, speaking of odd ways to negotiate, pay us by Friday or we're going to cut the power for Saturday night's game. And then they don't play on Friday. They don't pay on Friday. You don't cut the power for Saturday night's game. And on Sunday, you say, pay us by next Friday or we're going to cut the power to Saturday night's game. And it's like, man, you know who negotiates like that? People with no fucking leverage.
Yeah.
People who are bluffing.
Or just no clue.
I mean, and maybe he really can turn the lights off. Although, you know, the piece that John just published, like, it kind of sounds like Gardner doesn't call all the shots.
Yeah. And honestly, that it does provide a little bit of useful context to say that like, yeah, okay, so these leaks were coming from one side and one place, and the story is much more complicated than that, which is, I mean, it was more or less apparent from basically the series of events you just laid out, and the fact that as far as negotiations go, this makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, Peter, you had some broader thoughts because you've been calling for the Oakland Roots to play some hardball with the Coliseum generally the entire season. And I don't know if this is necessarily what you had in mind, but it is something in the ballpark, a really obvious metaphor.
It's interesting. I'll let you guys know if I get subpoenaed for my communications with anyone in the Roots front office about how they should play hardball. I think one of the things that jumps off as interesting to me is like, how did they end up $1.4 million behind? Because that money doesn't go missing, right? Like if they owe that money on the first of the month, or they owe it on game day or whatever, then like that's been piling up. And so clearly there must have been preceding communications about that. You know, it's hard to imagine that the Roots just like didn't do it and no one noticed until the tab got up to 1.4. But it occurs to me, I mean, I don't have any kind of insider knowledge here. This has been my speculation, is that the Roots may feel like they have been getting stymied, that they feel like they've gotten a bad deal with the Coliseum. And either that is that they just haven't been able to realize the benefit of the bargain because, as it turns out, the way the property is being managed just doesn't work for them, or they feel like they have been like actively stymied in some way. Again, I don't know that the Roots feel like this. It just strikes me as like a possibility, and it's a possibility consistent with what we've discussed and what people have been saying on Reddit and Discord, which is, it just feels like the Roots are getting hammered by fans over the cost of parking and the quality of food and the fact that you pay for food. I mean, food may well be more expensive than Oracle Park, you know?
I think.
Some of it's okay and some of it is normal ballpark food, you know, but it's not like it's something special.
Yeah. Could I, because you mentioned the benefit of the bargain, do you mind if I jump in real quick?
Sure.
Having already done that. I feel like it is worth remembering that when the Roots decided to play at the Coliseum, the bargain would have included some measure of prediction about something else happening to the Coliseum site. And every development in that regard has been towards, well, nothing really, the status quo, right? But there were plans for the Coliseum site. And it felt like perhaps at least part of what the Roots were doing was putting their own foot in there and saying, you know, we're part of Oakland. This is part of Oakland sports history. And is insofar as this is going to be redeveloped for sport, like we should be part of it. And now every major player who was involved in that 2 years ago has kind of fallen by the wayside. And I mean, if you're sitting in the Roots position, you're probably saying to yourself, well, look, I signed up for this thinking that something else was going to be the case. And now that, you know, we're stuck with this deal where we don't control parking and it is preventing people from coming, and we don't control concessions and that is preventing people from coming, like, I'm going to renegotiate. I'm going to do what I can to renegotiate the terms of this, because this is not actually the bargain that I was striking 2 to 3 years ago.
And if they feel like some aspect of this is inconsistent with the contract they signed, then they could think that it is within their rights under the contract to pay a smaller amount of money and to choose to enforce that by simply paying a smaller amount of money and letting the other party decide if they, you know, it, what kind of breach that is, if they want to sue, whatever. And as you were saying that, it occurred to me, I mean, a thing I hadn't really thought about in a while is the fact that the Roots have abandoned Malibu in the 2 years that they've been in the Coliseum. And I wonder if that is relating to a feeling that they simply cannot they cannot move forward with what they're working with on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that there were some, the cost of renovations and the cost of utility improvements and all of those things. But I mean, like you said, I mean, it kind of ties back to the fact that it's like 2 years have gone, and there have been some headlines about the overall redevelopment of the Coliseum site,
most of the movement appears to be in selling off the Oakland Arena separate from the rest of the Coliseum site.
Yeah.
Which is, I doubt what, I mean, I'm sure that was always part of the calculus, but I'm sure the calculus was not, we're going to sell the Oakland Arena and then we're just going to kind of sit on our, twiddle our thumbs for another decade about the rest of this site. Yeah. Because that doesn't help anybody. And I'm sure that's not how, that isn't the situation the Roos would want to be in.
Yeah. So, I think that, I'm curious where this goes from here. I mean, if, so I think that the Roots have to consider the possibility that the JPA turns the lights off, or gives them a real ultimatum, which they, you know, are not acting like this is so far. This quote from what's his name?
At least they're not publicly acting like it.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. I mean, they could well be scrambling on the back end to make sure that they can play at 5 Marriott home games or at Las Positas or something.
Yeah.
But.
Or CSU East Bay. I mean, if those renovations are done, you know, maybe they could. They probably, I would expect them to have some sense of how likely of where that line is. You know, what's the cutoff point where the lights are going to go off, you know? And one thing that I've been seeing, you know, sorry, to sort of finish the point here, like, if they owe $1.4 million and there is no attorney's fees provision in this contract, which, you know, there may or may not be, and it's going to cost the other side of this party $500,000 to get their $1.4 million, then you don't really owe $1.4 million. You really owe $900,000, you know? And the Roots may be playing some, they may be deciding that they can play some odds there. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody about it. Well, one
this
thing
is
I've,
not legal advice.
This is not legal advice.
That specifically, that particular bit of math is not legal advice. Always read your contracts and consult with an attorney about your specific situation, please.
And I mean, among the reasons why this is very different from, you know, like, this is a commercial lease between two sophisticated parties.
Maybe two sophisticated parties.
Two parties which we will assume to be sophisticated until further notice. And it's just not, you know, it's not a residential lease. And relatedly, I mean, a point I've seen on the internet is that this is going to hurt the Roots' credibility with future lenders. And, I don't really have a good sense of what, like, commercial lending is like. But it's not... your consumer credit score.
Yeah, that doesn't strike me as particularly, you know, plausible. And, this is like a risk they could take.
And I suspect that if the Roots are talking to a bank or some other kind of lender, and they would ask a question about this, and the Roots could just show their books, and the lender could make a decision. You know, yeah. But it's not like not making your credit card payment. You know, Oh yeah, to the point of this being two sophisticated entities. I mean, it keeps reminding me of the potentially apocryphal quote of, like, if you owe $100 to the bank, that's your problem. If you owe $100 million to the bank, that's the bank's problem. And it's sort of like the Roots owe $1.4 million. That's 90% of the money that the JPA was planning to make on the Coliseum this season. And it's sort of like, well, you shut the lights off. I bet you're not getting that $1.4 million.
No, I mean, simply by going to a reporter with that number, I mean, you sort of concede that it's your problem if you're the JPA. Like that, like you've already, you've basically let the world know that we are willing to take drastic measures for that $1.5 million, which isn't necessarily what, I mean, it doesn't feel like how you would typically negotiate this sort of thing from my perspective. And so part of, I kind of hinted at this, like part of this feels like this is somebody is upset with the way negotiations are progressing. And this is just all of it kind of spilling out into public view in a way that like is necessarily incomplete. And so it looks weird. And I guess with the JPA, if you've got a multi-member body who doesn't agree on exactly what to do, that like, those negotiations are going to be tough. But also if you're the Roots, like that's actually okay. Because if your counterparty is going to, if it's going to be difficult for your counterparty to move, like, you can hold your ground probably, and they don't have to do it for a whole lot longer now that they've fully decided to bail after this season. Sorry, Peter, I cut you off there.
No, I tried to cut you off twice and you didn't let me. Appreciate the apology, but it is not accepted. To an extent, I think that I think people involved in local government in the East Bay understand that when you want to get out your side of a story, you go to Steve Tavares and he'll run it.
color our understanding, right? To go back to it should color our understanding of what's going on here, that this is the direction from which this stuff has leaked. Now, obviously it doesn't look great for the Roots. And, I know for a couple of days there, John, you were at least expressing the view that like, look, maybe this isn't bad. Maybe like, maybe these are just negotiations that are going to work out, but like, come on, like how in the world have the Roots ended up in this position again? Like on some level, if you're going to be doing this every year, like it might be different scenarios, but if it's variations on the theme, like you gotta own that on some level. But I don't know, by and large, it just feels like someone on the other side is upset that with something, and this is how, and they've leaked this, and I just don't know if it means all that much.
No, I think you guys make some very valid points, and I enjoyed that. You know, I throw out the topic for you guys to discuss there, especially from your perspective with a law background. I really enjoyed that. So
you enjoy raising a topic and letting me and Aaron put our bar licenses on the line.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Do they ever listen to this? Do your coworkers ever? No.
Okay. Dear God,
please
I hope
don't.
Not.
Please don't.
I don't have coworkers. He doesn't anymore. Have coworkers.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's right. Congrats for you, dude.
Oh,
congrats,
thank you. I unfortunately don't know the ethical rules about advertising my law practice yet, so I can't advertise my law practice yet.
This is not Peter advertising his law practice.
You hear that, Lindsay? Bring him in. Bring him in.
Jesus Christ, no.
No, I mean, it is a tough situation. You know, I have had gripes with, you know, getting into this whole mess in the first place. But, you know, to me, I think there were mistakes that led to Roots playing at the Coliseum. You know, I look back to the Alameda Point decision to not go that way. But, you know, that being said, you know, after Alameda Point was done away with, you know, you can't play at Laney, you can't play at CSU East Bay because they're undergoing renovations. You can't play at Edwards in Berkeley for the same reason. you know, Roots had nowhere else to go, and they essentially kind of had to play ball with what the JPA's demands were, no matter how bad they were. So, I mean, I do think that leadership should take some criticism for all that has transpired towards, you know, things just not working out well at the Coliseum. Like, that maybe there should have been some, you know, foreseen bad circumstances that they could have seen coming. But I don't know. I mean, it is a mess. And look, it is a year after year thing that this club is worrying about where they're going to play. You know, no other club in the USL is in this situation. And that too, the leadership deserves some criticism. You know, there has to be a point to where there is a firm plan in place. Like, look, there's only so many months left until 2027, and only so much time until next season starts. You know, for Harbor Bay to become a reality, things really, like, we're already in crunch time. Things have to get pushing. You know, I in my in the Harbor Bay announcement, they did say that it would take 6 months to build. I want to say that that's more of like a safe, like, oh, we're going to take it slow timeline. You know, you look at these other modular stadiums around the league. Phoenix went up in a really short amount of time. This would essentially be a copycat of that. My hope is that if they finalize Harbor Bay, this is what they're going to do, that it doesn't take 6 months. You know, it can take maybe even half of that. You know, that's an optimistic view, but it's similar to what Phoenix did. So, you know, things have to get going. And if they can't finalize that, it's another hit against the leadership of the club. And you know, they deserve that criticism. So things gotta get moving really, really quickly. We should have more news in the coming weeks or months. You know, good for me.
Yes, good for you, good for the blog. I mean, I will say, of all of the minor league sports executives in the United States, those who have to deal with the Bay Area real estate market might have the most difficult task. So I take your point, but you know, there's a lot of forces working against anyone who's trying to put up a stadium anywhere in the Bay Area these days. You know, they had the mayor behind the effort to redo the one in San Francisco, and they can't even seem to make that happen on a timely basis. So it's a lot, but I think that's also a good note to add to the story that 6 months is a generous timeline for getting that place ready in Alameda. And if you can do it in half the time, you know, and have your first five or six matches be on the road, stick a couple of bye weeks in there, like you actually don't need to. You could get away with, if you really needed to, not breaking ground in a significant way until after winter.
Yeah, you know, other teams around the league have prolonged that first game. You know, I think it was Rhode Island. I was on Daniel's podcast yesterday. He mentioned Hartford. I'm forgetting which one it was. But they pushed the start of their, you know, home games back like 2 months' time. You know, instead of March, it was May that they didn't play their first home game until. So that's something the USL could work with. I think the biggest hurdle is just getting those final approvals. They have to convince the city that, you know, it's not going to generate traffic to and from the matches. I think that the quick fix there is just to, you know, funnel people down the parkway towards across the airport instead of, you know, allowing people to go through Alameda. That would be tough on you guys. But I mean, I think that is the quick fix there is just, you know, tell people to take the extra minutes.
Just extremely funny, by the way, briefly, that extreme American planning brain is that, like, the city of Alameda can say, this is too much traffic for you to put on our streets. Therefore, we will permit you to do this if you direct the traffic into Oakland.
Yeah, and it's yeah,
man. We should abolish city government.
This is why cities shouldn't exist. Yeah, why megalopolises should just consolidate everything. It's true. It's true. Plus, it's already in like a industrial area.
But. Yeah, you know, another gripe was the, you know, sound from the games. Like, that's yeah,
this is what happens. You get people on issue. Planning commissions that are like paid to care about things, so they decide they need to, and it's
yeah. Like, I think the closest homes are like a mile away, maybe a little bit less than that. I don't think sound's going to be a big problem. But, you know, that being said, how important is it to, I mean, the future of the club hinges on Harbor Bay getting finalized. You know, the Coliseum parking lot was another option, but I think it's full steam ahead on Harbor Bay.
Pretty much burn that Coliseum parking lot.
Yeah, I know, right.
I think.
So, I mean, look, like, it has to get pushed forward. You know, Roots need a lot of people on their side, or, you know, 2027 is looking really, really murky, where don't know exactly what would happen if they can't get it done. So really important days ahead.
When the Raiders were leaving, I was thinking that the Raiders would be a perfect team to do a sort of like permanent away thing, where they like take over some other team's home stadium and just play their home games there. And they're like,
it's interesting. They've sort of done the inverse because they play in Las Vegas. So,
every other team
takes over Alliance or Allegiant Field or whatever it is every time they play.
Well, and if you made it like an event, you could be like a unique team in American sports.
Well, you'd be the Harlem Globetrotters.
A unique minus one team. Anyway, the Roots are just backing into that, right? So yeah. I look forward to watching the 2027 season in Las Positas. I was thinking recently about how some of those games are really fun.
Yes. We just need to orient the field so all of the fans are not staring into the sun for the first 60 minutes. If I'm just putting that out into the universe now, if we have to go back to Las Positas, please just change how the field is oriented. Just shift it a little bit. All right, that's enough. That's enough law talk, enough business talk for this episode, I think. Let's move on, reluctantly probably, to the actual footy. Three league matches. I guess there was a fourth match in there. They played Spokane Velocity, and they fell on their sword appropriately in a manner that allowed Spokane to qualify for the next round of the USL Cup and preclude Sacramento Republic from doing so. So that's cool. That's cool. And that was a pretty heavily rotated side in a game that was meaningless for the Oakland Roots. So very few lessons to learn there, I think. Except that I guess we needed to get it out of the way before we sent Ali Elmasnawi up there on loan. But we can more or less forget about that match. The other three matches, it's not a lot you want to talk about. New Mexico 2, Oakland 1, Lexington 2, Oakland 0, and Oakland 1, Sacramento 3. And I mean, there was a bit of bad luck there. I think the Roots, they did not deserve to get shut out against Lexington. I thought they played Lexington very well. They just couldn't convert their chances, which is kind of the story of the season at this moment in time. Against Sacramento, they're tied 1-1 and give up a goal that I am personally convinced, if there were video-assisted review, would not have stood. I understand why the touchline official did not rule that the Sacramento player who was standing in an offside position, why he did not rule that he interfered with the play from that offside position. But I think if the ref had the benefit of replay, he would have to have had come to a different conclusion. And then the Roots are behind the eight ball against Sacramento. They gave up a late goal. You know, they very easily could have come out of this stretch with 2 or 4 points instead of zero, but they came out with zero, and now they're sitting in ninth place. And the fact that they scored two goals over these three matches, I think you're in a position where you said, you know, we brought in Tucker Lepley on loan. We had several weeks to work on whatever issues had been plaguing the team, and they just seem to have gone in the wrong direction. And now you got to ask yourself, what is it that other teams are for sure seeing? What are they doing? And is there a way, is there a solution, an in-house solution to countering this? And it's getting pretty late for the in-house solution, honestly. I mean, it feels like to me, and I'll throw it to you guys for you to pontificate however you want on these matches, but it feels like teams have recognized the Roots have trouble getting the ball from back to front. They just don't do it very quickly. Tommy McCabe, Bobosi Barahunga, they don't have necessarily the outlets they need to move the ball from the base of the midfield up to the attackers in at the speed you would want that to happen in order to generate chances. And teams are just sort of sitting off and, you know, saying, okay, go ahead. You know, we got to deal with passes coming from those two guys, and no one else is going to hurt us. I do sort of wonder if part of that issue is a knock-on effect from the fact that we haven't played the first choice back line since what, week 2, week 3 of the season, that it was pretty clear at the time that how the back line and the interplay between the fullbacks and the center backs, that was going to be pretty key to what the Oakland Roots were going to do. And they haven't really been able to do precisely what they wanted along those lines. And maybe there's an element of what we're seeing, you know, to that, but they got to figure something out, you know, and it's, they're just not, regularly creating chances, and they're having a hell of a time finishing. And obviously that's something that could turn around at any time, but you would have expected by this point to see a bunch of goals from Danny Trejo, given some of the chances he's created or been on the end of. Same thing with Florian Vallot, to a certain extent, Bertrand Jacquesson as well. And really it's just Peter Wilson, and that is not getting it done. The goals have to come from somewhere else. Cause the system is not perfect, but it is better than ninth place. If you ask me, that's sort of where I come out right now. But I'm going to throw you guys, take the floor.
I was listening to all that, but I do want to point out that you suggested that we pontificate, and I was curious. And in fact, that word does come from speaking like a bishop or the Pope.
Yeah. I mean, that seems appropriate.
Yeah. There's
now
also
that
a noun
from Chicago. Like, I feel like it's,
that's right.
It's perfect.
There's also a noun form, pontificate, which refers to the office of the Pope or Bishop. Anyway,
that's less applicable.
How do we fix the Roots? Have we tried unplugging them and plugging them back in?
Blow on it a little bit.
You know, at the Sacramento game, like, my brother was there with his son, and all of us like agreed that through like 65 minutes it was an even game. You know, the changes in the second half I don't think worked right. Or maybe what it is that, you know, it felt like the Roots ran the same play 4 times and every time it worked in the first half. Long ball to Tingey. Tingey was 6 inches taller than the man marking him, so he won every header.                                                                                                                ================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================                ================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================└============················================================================================================================================================================================================└ put it down into the path of Jockeson. Jockeson sprang an attack. It didn't turn into very much. But like that seemed to be working. And then I think Sacramento may have changed the person who was matched up against Tingey in the second half. And then that avenue was just closed. And then Jockeson came off and whatever. But even, you know, we had more chances when that was working. Even when we didn't, it really felt like the problem is like Peter Wilson was triple covered in the box. And we couldn't figure out how to get, you know, that means there's at least one extra man somewhere. And I think what we were doing is we had these like triangles going in the like attacking the outside final third. We would get this little triangle going with Trejo on one side and Velo on the other, with the corresponding outside winger and outside back. And they would never pass the ball into the middle because every time they would look in the middle, it was Peter Wilson triple covered. And they also didn't seem to figure out like how one of them could get the ball into the box. And that seems solvable. Maybe part of the answer is Sacramento's defense is better at this than most other teams. And so that attacking performance does better in another game. You know, no fixes required. But it kind of feels like, you know, credit to Velo, he got a goal in this game. I mean, I don't want to be overly harsh on him. But it kind of feels like that's the position, one of the positions that's really not carrying its weight right now is like either how do we get the ball to Wilson or how do we take advantage of it when Wilson pulls as much, you know, when Wilson asserts as much gravity as he is currently asserting, someone's open. What do we do with that? It also kind of feels like the reason why we're losing these games instead of drawing them is that our defense always has at least one mistake in it. Oh, and sometimes
game. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And that's exactly what Ryan Martin said in the recent interview. Yeah.
It's frustrating, right? Because I mean, I've been very critical of Hackshaw on this podcast. And I don't think, you know, I think broadly he's looked better in the last like four or five games.
He's had some okay games. Yeah.
He's had some great passes. You know, I've seen him make a lot of aerial contributions as he almost always does. So I don't even think this is entirely on him. And in fact, I raise that to say that I think that frequently I watch our defense and I'm like, everything they're doing right now is good. But there always seems to be like one or two errors that get punished, and then we have lost.
Look at Lexington. I mean, the errors there weren't on the defensive players. It was, you know, Florian Velo giving up a ball, 15 yards before the midfield line, and then Tucker Lepley just not sure what he's doing there. At the end of a corner, takes like three or four dribbles, cuts to his left, realizes nothing's there, cuts back to his right, and just gets swarmed. And it leads to a 3-on-1 counterattack the other way. So those costly mistakes, and it comes through in each of these games. But to Aaron's point, and man, like, you know, we've been talking about this for shit. How many games in a row where it's like they need to have that third goal scorer, and it's not happening. You know, I think that Martin is getting that sense too, you know, for the last number of matches or leading into this was the focus was like, oh, we're confident Trejo's going to get going, you know, Velo's going to get going. Before the season started, we talked about it. I even talked to Martin about it, how the attack is looking like the deepest area on the team. Well, they've taken a lot of swings and just none of them have worked out. So you need that third guy to take the pressure off of Wilson, like you said, getting triple teamed, to take the pressure off of Wolfgang, because now the full attention is on those guys and people are betting like, oh, you know, Trejo's not going to put the shot away, or Velo's going to make a mistake and not put the shot away. And, you know, we're in that time of the year where teams are, you put the final touches on the roster. And I asked Martin what area he's looking to improve. And what does he say? The attack, you know, regardless of having that depth and adding Tucker Lepley to the mix already midseason. So what this is just telling me, and what the sense that I get, it's just all the makings of a year one roster build. You know, that you bet on these veterans to come in and help install the system and, you know, have that veteran mindset to really get this system going in year one. And it's looking like with that, the page is turning on Danny Trejo, on Florian Vallot, on a Bertrand Jacquesson, you know, Hack Shaw as well. You know, and these are important positions on the field that the front office and that Martin was betting on to make this transition a bit easier. And, you know, here we are, and he's saying, well, we still need another attacker. So that tells me that it's got to be a significant addition. Right, it's got to be a surefire starter that comes in on that right side, or maybe that central attacking midfielder spot, maybe both. You know how this team does. You need a guy who can play multiple positions. So I think, yeah, that's got to be where the focus is on now, what's gonna be the move. But hey, it tells you that money shouldn't be that big of a problem, right?
Yeah, there's $1.5 million to go out there and sign somebody. It's just bank account right now.
Yeah. So they definitely have the player budget. You know, they definitely are, they're going to make a move, and it's probably going to be a significant move. It's going to be a guy that they believe can come in, start right away, and contribute goals. So,
Dom Dwyer. See.
Oh yeah, boy.
I mean, it's hard to, you can't really fault the front office for this one though. You know, like you go into this season, the year 2026, and you've got the reigning Golden Boot winner. You've got Danny Trejo and you've got Florian Vallot, and you're thinking to yourself, this is going to be,
you're going to be fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Quality USL level attack right here. And
And that's,
I mean, they have been fine, right? At the end of the day, they've scored 25 goals in 17 matches, but it just doesn't feel like it's clicking. And it's mm-hmm. 7 goals in the last 7, but 4 of those came against a Phoenix team who I guess just went out there and decided to play into Oakland's hands. Like, they did pretty much everything wrong that you can do when you're trying to defend the Oakland Roots. So three goals in the other 6 games, which is pretty consistent with what I feel like I'm watching. Like, trouble creating chances, trouble putting chances away. You know, they're just not leaving themselves enough room for error, you know, on the offensive side of the field.
I mean, it all points to that year one build, you know, like you know, you got a good striker, you know, you got a left, like there are signs of life, like Wolfgang having a career year, building blocks in the midfield. Tommy McCabe still looks like he can get the job done. Bobosi looks like there is still more steps with his development. I think you're comfortable at both fullback positions. You know, Dave Vicente looks like he's a USL championship level fullback. Tingy is serviceable. He gets the job done. You have normally 2 center backs that you're really, really confident in. Before Garcia went out, it's looking like maybe the best center back combination in the league. But it comes back to taking the pressure off of Wilson and Wolfgang, and they just haven't found the answer there. So, you know, you bet on those veterans, and it's, to me, what it's showing is that these veterans are in the twilight of their career. I think Florian Vallot knows that. He had a post on social media where he talked about feeling like his body was giving up on him. He talked about his mental health and how, you know, he maybe has to start thinking of life after soccer. Who is he without the game? So, you know, I think really that really shows just where some of these players on this roster are right now, how there are building blocks, but they have big holes at big positions.
Does it feel like your body is abandoning you is something we can really empathize with on this podcast, I think.
Does it feel like the Roots specialize in bringing guys in who suddenly start thinking about what's more important in life than sports? Like, isn't that just
they've got this Cam Riley on staff who's working against them. Oh man. Well, I mean, again, not all is lost. Still 13 matches to go in the regular season, and the Roots are 3 points out of fourth place. Now, number of teams ahead of them have games in hand on the Roots, so, you know, they will have a chance to pull away, but I think experience has shown that it's unlikely that all of them will do so. The West is pretty well compacted this season, and honestly, the thing that is dragging the Roots down right now is not their performance against other teams in the West, but their performance against teams in the East, which has been weirdly uneven. And that is not a problem that has plagued a number of their competitors for playoff spots in the West, but they've played so well. It would be so odd, I think, if they didn't make the playoffs. They're absolutely a playoff caliber squad, even if the last three matches have been tough to take. But they're in a very good spot, and they have guys coming back from injury, right? I mean, the injury list is mercifully shrinking as the days go by, and again, no one's running away with this. No one's getting away from them, so it'll be okay. It'll be okay. Next set of matches, Pittsburgh at home, Las Vegas Lights on the road, and then El Paso on the road. So, you know, this is actually, I mean, Pittsburgh at home, that's a chance to finally get some success against the East, but it's those other two. Right now, Las Vegas is sitting in 11th place. Although they are even on points and on goal differential with the Oakland Roots.
With the game.
El Paso is in 8th place. So these are basically over the, you know, the coming week, they've got a good opportunity to play a team who will have traveled across the country at home, and then 2 6-pointers. And that's, I think, if after a 3-game slide, what you want is a chance to go out there and immediately correct your mistakes. And that's what the Roots have in front of them. So 3 matches is a lot to predict all at once. So let's not do that, but what is the storyline for the Oakland Roots on the on-field storyline for the Oakland Roots coming out of this next set of matches?
Storyline, here's my headline. Oakland Roots, Henry Gardner, the Lights.
Presumably you think the Oakland Roots are going to win all 3 of these matches.
So,
hell yeah.
I mean, the way the West is shaping up so far, like, there's no set of results here that are going to mathematically ruin the Roots season. You know, there may start being some differentiation in the span of the next 3 games. But, like, realistically, you know, Switchbacks are 3rd and they're 4 points ahead of Roots. You know, Orange County and San Antonio might start leaving us behind. But, like, 3rd is going to be feasible for, you know, we could lose the next 5 games and 3rd would still be mathematically possible, you know, setting aside what losing 8 in a row means for how good you are, like, just mathematically. That being said, I mean, I think through the next three games, the Roots are still going to look like a team that is fighting for fourth. And I think that probably means, at worst, a win and a draw and a loss. And I think 4 points keeps us around the playoff line and striking distance of fourth. So I don't know that I'm predicting 1-1-1. I think I may predict a win and two draws. But, you know, I don't think we're going to do worse than 1-1-1.
Yeah, I'd actually go two wins and a draw. Back-to-back road road fixtures, Las Vegas and El Paso. That could be pretty rough on a group of players who are contemplating life on a broader level at this point. But they're talented enough, you know, to really put their mark on these games. And if they get 7 points out of these three matches, I bet they're right back up in fifth or sixth place, possibly even with fourth. I mean, one of the tricks here is going to be that New Mexico has three games in hand. Sacramento has two. Tulsa has two. And so they'll have more opportunities to start putting distance between themselves and the Oakland Roots. But, like, they haven't really shown that they're equipped to just run away and hide this season. So I think the Roots will be right back in the playoff spot, comfortably in a playoff spot by the end of this set of fixtures. And probably, you know, the lights won't have gone out, and the actual physical lights over the Coliseum won't have gone out, and things will just look so much brighter in about a week's time.
Before we go, I want to throw out there that there is a special meeting called from the JPA on July 31st. That's Friday. There will be public comment. So I encourage any of you diehards who are listening to this to phone in to those public comments and leave your thoughts to Henry Gardner. There is another meeting. No, I mean, I think it's important, actually. The more people that do it, the more newsworthy it is. There is another one on August 21st. So, yeah, I encourage anyone listening to this, if you're listening to this, you are a Root sicko. So if you have the time, do it and make your voice heard.
And also seek help.
Yes. Maybe a therapist.
Therapist. And, of course, always get independent legal advice for any of your legal problems. Please do not rely on anything you hear on this podcast. Oh, all right. Big week ahead. Public comment, several Roots matches. I mean, what more could you want as an Oakland Roots sicko than a chance to chime in on the stadium debacle and watch 270 minutes of Roots football? Probably nothing.
Oh, hold on. It's been like a month because it's been forever since we recorded. There is an update on the plumbing.
Oh, my God. Yes.
So on our last podcast, I said that I was just going to give in and have the plumber come by and fix the plumbing in my bathroom sink. And Discord user Sibelius, who I'm not sure how public he wants his actual identity, so I'm going to keep calling him Sibelius, responded to when I posted the podcast, or when John posted the podcast, and he said, "Oh, I know how to fix a sink aerator. You know, like don't spend all this money on it." So anyway, we DM'd. He doesn't live that far away from me, so he came over and dismantled my sink, and it doesn't look like he diagnosed that it wasn't the aerator that had jammed, although the plumber was actually correct that the black rubber gasket had deteriorated and jammed it, but it had jammed the like pillar that the faucet sits on, so like before it even gets to the aerator. And he had brought his shop vac and he has like a plumbing fixture on it. And he just sort of jammed that down in the top of that pillar, ran the shop vac for a little bit, and it works. So we had taken apart the entire faucet. And it was like loose when we tried to reattach it, and realized that there was like a plate that was supposed to sit between the nuts and bolts that connect it to the thing, right? And so this is a tiny little vanity, and he's in there reattaching that, and I'm standing there, you know, chatting and watching, and we hear this sound, and he has dropped the plate, and he's like trying to find it underneath him, cannot, comes fully out, and we realize that he has managed to drop it through the cutout in the back of the vanity where the piping comes in through the wall. So a half inch gap that drops 9 inches down. And so we're like, we get a magnet to see if we can like lift it up through the thing. Doesn't work. Ultimately, once again, the shop vac with his little attachment manages to like snake over the top, suck it up into the shop vac, get the piece out of the shop vac, attach it to the bottom of the sink. Everything works great. Sibelius is also, I suspect, a new dad in the time since then. So I have not seen him at a Roots game and had an opportunity to buy him a beer. But I owe him beers up to, I would say, a value of $1,500, which is what the plumber included me at.
Yeah, that sounds like $1,500 worth of work right there.
So anyway, that's the, you know.
That's good stuff.
Sure, there's only two dozen of us who record or listen to this podcast, but we're a tight-knit group.
That's right. That's awesome.
Looks out for each other.
John, do you have any home repair issues you'd like to throw out there just in case?
No, but that was a beautiful story. Who
was beautiful.
Who would have known that a Roots blog, Roots Pod, would have led to this interaction? It's a thing of beauty.
It's by far the biggest financial windfall that Roots Blog has ever produced for any member of this blog.
that's the first time any of us have come out in the black, honestly.
That's right.
All right. Crunch time in the 2026 season, and we'll have lots to talk about the next time we record. And of course, until then, up the Roots.